we are all trying to solve the same problems. We're trying to deliver better services to the people we serve. We are all trying to recruit and retain the best talent. We are all trying to improve the system. Really, that's why all of us, I think, are in healthcare, because we see that there is an opportunity to continue to improve for ourselves, our families, our friends, those we serve, and those that we employ.
This is Coming of Age, Meeting the Needs of Our Aging Population, a podcast about how we can better support our seniors. I'm your host, Donna Duncan. I am also the CEO of the Ontario Long-Term Care Association, which represents about 70% of long-term care homes in Ontario, Canada. This episode was generously sponsored by our sector champion, Plan A, powered by Staffstat. Welcome back to a new episode of Coming of Age. We know that our elderly population is growing, with the first of the baby boomers turning 80 in 4 years. And we know that the baby boom generation wants to remain at home for as long as possible. We all want that, but we also know that 1 in 5 seniors over the age of 80 will have complex care needs that will only be able to be met safely in long-term care. The pressure on our system is critical, with more than 40,000 people waiting for long-term care in Ontario, Canada today. This means leaders across the health system, from home and community care to hospital and long-term care, are facing similar challenges. It will take all health sector leaders and others, including all levels of government, to work together to find the solutions to meet the needs of this aging population. In today's episode, I'm joined by 3 health system leaders who are dedicated to providing innovative solutions for people as they age. Carly Farrow is the president and CEO of Trillium Health Partners, which operates a network of large hospitals in the Greater Toronto Area. Trillium is among the largest health systems in Canada today and is located in one of the fastest growing and most diverse communities in our country. Tess Romain is the president of Partners Community Health, which includes a long-term care home and is developing an emerging interconnected community for seniors and caregivers, anchored in innovation in meeting the needs of the people they serve. Nitin Jain is president and CEO of Sienna Senior Living, one of Canada's largest senior living organizations operating long-term care homes and retirement residences in various Canadian provinces. These 3 leaders have significant experience and innovative ideas on how to improve care for seniors and how collaboration in leadership will make it possible. Most important is that they're implementing these innovations within their own organizations, but also together. Let's dive in. I am so delighted and so grateful to you, Nitin, Carly, and Tess, for joining our podcast. It's always really exciting to bring inspirational leaders to the discussion as we think about how we meet the needs of our aging population, not only in Ontario, Canada, but around the world. I want to start off with a context level set, and so I'm going to start with you, Carly, if I may. We know that an elderly baby boomer demographic is coming soon, and the point where they're reaching the age of 80 is upon us now. But we also know that boomers want to remain at home for as long as possible, and we want to help them do that. But we also know that up to 20% of the population over 80 will need more specialized care. What can we do as a system and as leaders to better prepare for what's coming, but also to manage expectations?
Thanks, Donna. In the Ontario context or nationally, we care for a seniors demographic that is the most diverse in the world. And that's a real strength of our country, how we've been able to create really binding and powerful communities. made up of people who've come from all over the world. For our community that we serve at Trillium Health Partners, over 50% of our community are new Canadians. And so their definition of what independence looks like, what care looks like, is variable. The preferences that seniors have, the circumstances that they live in, and then the supports that can be designed for them is a really important first part of the story. Because we know that the desire to stay at home longer is actually the right thing from a social perspective, from a health outcome perspective, and from an overall sustainability of our resources. But that only works if we're designing care and offerings in a way that meets people where they are. You know, at a hospital, we end up receiving people who are so ill by the time that they've arrived to us that many times we have to admit them into the hospital. We have no choice. So our entire effort is to say, how do we move totally upstream with partners? And that's where I go to the point of we all have a role to play in understanding this, because if we break down the income reality, the social needs, the kind of reality that people have in terms of caregiver support, family support, their preferences, their language, which is an incredibly important point. And then we wrap around kind of the innovation of how we can partner across all of these sectors. That's where we'll be able to create care closer to home that actually works. How do we wrap around innovation? We can use virtual care to extend services out closer to the community. The same is true for diagnostic services. There are things that we can do as a collective between community, long-term care, and hospital services that actually design services to say, okay, we understand. If you're a new Canadian that does not speak English, how do we think about innovations like voice technology linking you to your first language? So we do this in the hospital now where we can digitally connect to any language in the world with a touch of an iPad. What that means in terms of how we as a system operate and how we set expectations, we all have a role to play. Private sector retail has a role to play. The housing sector has a role to play, but comes back to a real understanding of who are these seniors in the first place. And in a world where we are sitting atop mounds of data and information, how do we galvanize that to simplify an understanding of what they need?
Well, that's such a thoughtful context setting, Carly. You know, we are certainly doing work as an association to really understand who are the individuals in long-term care, what are their specific needs, and how do we make sure that we're building services and supports within that context? I think there's a nice segue to you, Nitin. You've got a broad background. You run one of the largest seniors living organizations in Canada, and you are pan-Canadian. You also have long-term care and seniors housing, but you've also come from a different retail background and have brought some really fresh eyes into the seniors care sector. As you think about solutions, what personal experiences and expertise can you offer to our listeners with respect to those solutions?
Thank you for that, Dawn. And I think when you look at seniors, the idea is not that senior needs long-term care or they need home care, or they need retirement or need hospital. They need all of it, and they might need some of it more often than not. And I think it is so very, very different for each senior. This sector is very personal to me because I grew up in India and my grandfather had mobility issues and he lived with us throughout his life. So I saw my father take care of my grandfather for nearly two decades, if not more. And there are two things, you know, I learned out of that. The first one was instant, that I realized the wisdom of elders, and seeing my father take care of him is the, how do you care of your elders? So I think that was the first one. And the second one, which took me a few years to recognize, you know, after coming back from school every day, I would have, when I had lunch, I sat with my grandfather just outside and we would just talk about things, not realizing that I was going to the best business school in the world and learning about, you know, whether it was how do you work with different people, whether it was about business, whether it was about leadership. And over, you know, many decades, I've realized that was some of the best learning experience of my life. So now, now I say that my grandfather was my first mentor and probably educated me the most. And then when you transfer it to our sector, you know, at Ciena, we believe there are two things we love the most in our life, our parents and our kids. And it is an extreme privilege of taking care of people's parents. So that's really what drives us. And that's the purpose of our company, which is cultivating happiness in daily life. And Carly touched on something which was really around that the kind of seniors we look after is quite different. You know, the senior demographics is the fastest growing demographics. 1 in 5 Canadians is going to be a senior next year, 1 in 4 in the next 15 years. But the kind of senior is also changing. So far, we have been taking care of parents of baby boomers who grew through the Great Depression. They had a certain value of money because they saw how difficult times were. Things were a bit more structured. Lunch was from 12 to 1:30. You have two choices. That's how retirement homes were and even long-term care homes were. And when we undertook quite a bit of research as we thought about what should our operating platform stand for, what is our brand promise to our residents, three things came out: personalization, choice, and connection to the local community. Because now we have baby boomers coming into retirement living and long-term care who grew through one of the biggest economic boom of our time. And their idea of money is very, very different. It is no lunches when I tell you my lunches, and no, there are not two choices. I will eat what I want to eat for lunch that day. So that's where the personalization and choice become a big deal. And I would think it's definitely true for the hospital system, but it's also very true for long-term care and retirement living, that people don't really move too far to live in a retirement home or long-term care. And the only time they will do that is either they're going closer to their kids or their grandkids. So the idea of being connected to the local community is so very important to seniors, regardless of the setting, whether they're getting home care services, living in their house, in a retirement home, or they're getting long-term care services, staying in a long-term care home. The way we get to do all of this is through the team members. So any given day, 12,000 of our Ciena team members serve 10,000 Canadian seniors across 4 provinces. And our belief is the best way we can care for our residents is by taking care of our team members, because eventually if we serve them right, they're going to provide the right services to the residents.
That theme that's really resonating is that personalization. How do we make sure that we're meeting the needs of people where they want to be? How do they want to receive the services? And again, the theme of that connection to the local community is really resonating. Tess, as we come together across the system to bring these solutions to life, and you are doing that in your local community. Really, I think that the notion of these seniors hubs is just fascinating. How do we open up the possibilities? Where do you start? And how do we make these possibilities actually come to life?
Well, thanks so much, Donna. And it's great to be here with my colleagues. And you'll probably hear some themes repeating. So Partners Community Health, our organization, is relatively new, nonprofit charitable organization formed just a couple of years ago. And we really started with the vision of, we want to do things differently. And part of that is resisting that urge to focus on the limitations of partnerships and instead focus on what we can learn from partners. I think sometimes there is a sense that, we're competitors. But what you've heard is actually that, and I think Nitin said this quite well, we actually need to work together across the system to serve people. We also recognize that often we assume that everyone understands how the system works, the health system, and it is actually a complex system. And so we need to ensure that we're also providing that information, as well as appreciating and embracing that we can't do everything ourselves, and that partnership is less about losing agency or funding, but expanding our ability and capabilities to deliver more to those that we're serving. We saw this in real time during the pandemic. I had the privilege of being at a regional health provider at the time. And really, we saw many responses coming from different sectors coming together: acute care, long-term care, community, primary care, home care, public health. Non-health funded organizations came together because we needed to respond to what was happening to people in their community that wasn't just health related, it was social as well. And so that demonstrates that we can actually achieve and work together across the system to problem solve. Part of what I've seen in long-term care is that we have the opportunity to become more closely tied with the broader health system. And that long-term care, as Nitin highlighted, has significant expertise and experience that can benefit the system overall and those we serve, especially our aging population. As I came into long-term care, I was so impressed with the skills and expertise and creativity of our team members that could be shared beyond the walls of the homes that we operate. And there are many ways, I think, to do this. One of the important things for me as a leader in a fairly new organization was really thinking about how do we encourage and I myself participate in local tables. So finding the opportunities, whether it's through association, whether it's at government tables, whether it's at different planning tables, local planning tables, different groups that actually engage seniors and being able to hear from people on what they need, but also engaging to share more about where we are as an organization, what we're planning to build, and what do we need to do. Sometimes in our course of building our organization, we recognize that something we had planned that sounded like a great idea, actually, there are several other providers who do the same thing in the area. So maybe we shouldn't be duplicating that activity, but actually learning how we partner with them in order to extend services. We are all trying to solve the same problems. We're trying to deliver better services to the people we serve. We are all trying to recruit and retain the best talent. We are all trying to improve the system. Really, that's why all of us, I think, are in healthcare, because we see that there is an opportunity to continue to improve for ourselves, our families, our friends, those we serve, and those that we employ. And so, you know, some of the examples of that, I would say, are, for example, Carly spoke about the technology for translation. Well, when we learned about that, we thought, why can't we bring that to long-term care? Let's understand how this works. Let's understand how we can bring this forward. What are other ways that we can learn, whether from Nitin's organization or others within our sector, but also those outside of our sector in different sectors?
Those are such great examples about the kind of innovation that you're leading. And so much of what you're talking about, Tess, is what's happening on the ground that each of you is bringing to the table, and you are making this possible by bringing others together. And you are really, through that shared vision, doing things in a very different kind of way. I am wondering, Carly, and we had one of our earlier episodes, we interviewed two individuals from the United States about initiatives in California and New York and a number of other states where government itself is taking a lead in doing multi-sector planning. The concept of, to your point, we all have a role to play, whether it's in housing, transportation, research and innovation, education, post-secondary education, community services, and hospitals, long-term care, other seniors care. What do we need in terms of leadership from government, from a policy perspective, that would actually facilitate more of the types of partnerships that the three of you are driving together?
It's probably not $1 million question. It's at least $1 billion question. I always start by saying I don't envy any partnership of a minister of finance and a minister of health these days. Those are really hard jobs, and they work incredibly hard to try to solve for these things. You know, from my perspective, sitting back, I think the first and fundamental part of this is to really set the stage for what are the outcomes we want. So we want quality of life for seniors. It has to start there. And what we see often is that there's a myriad. There's thousands of regulations. There's thousands of programs. There's dozens of ministries. There's tens of thousands of different funding arrangements, if not more, hundreds of thousands. And they don't always work to the end goal that we need for this kind of monumental shift in society. So starting with outcomes is always a simple thing to say, but very hard for us to stay focused on. But that allows you to design incentives and the flexibility of government frameworks and funding around what we're all trying to achieve, and everybody being really clear about that. And those outcomes have to be a bit more specific than we've had over, I would say, the last generation of thinking about policy in seniors care, because the need to integrate all of the parts that we've described is really incredibly important. So that's where I always start. We were all a part of a recent set of conversations that yielded a bit of a question around what will our seniors do as longevity also increases to tap into the funding and sustainability, their own personal finances, how that links to housing in particular, or availability of a pension. You know, in the Canadian context, much of our seniors' population will see that housing, their investments in real estate, are where they have to tap some of their wealth to be able to pay for the things that will give them that independence and things that are really appropriately being innovated by the private sector to give them the kind of wellness and overall independence that they want. But we need to understand, in an environment where housing is constrained in our country and where we have a very urban residential population, what does that look like? We then also have to determine our boundaries and coherent policy framework for privacy and data sharing. And I don't know where we end up on that as a society. There are many things we have to consider. Trillium has created an advent into artificial intelligence for our population, which, you know, our admitted population through our emergency department right now is 60% seniors. So we've worked with an amazing leading Canadian company and introduced an AI intervention called Signal One, where we can actually use the data in our health record to generate prompts for clinicians on what to be thinking about 10 steps ahead for an individual to reduce their length of stay and improve their overall quality of care. But we have to test these models carefully because our professional staff need to feel confident that those prompts actually match their clinical judgment. And in a complexity scenario where 75% of seniors have at least two chronic diseases, that complexity and entrusting that into the machine learning kind of answers that come out, this is a big leap of faith in many moments. There are parts of healthcare that can become very productive with the use of AI, but as we have big framework discussions to have and tests of change. And I believe that government has a role to play at this moment. It's a bigger moment for public policy.
It really is a moment of massive disruption. Nitin, welcome your insights on this. I know we have lots of discussions around how do we even stabilize our long-term care homes. How are you navigating this moment which has great ambiguity in it, because we don't know exactly how some of these changes are going to manifest themselves. So how are you leading? How are you managing to plan to both stabilize through the period of disruption, but also to be able to be nimble enough to take advantage of what's before us in terms of the innovation and some of the considerations that Carly has really so well articulated?
We started saying in 2016 that we would not have enough places for seniors to live in. And we were saying that when we were building 5% of new inventory each year. And by that, I mean that for every 100 senior spaces, we were adding 5 more. And given the interest rate environment and construction costs, that number is now 1.5%. So the number of seniors are not decreasing, but the number of spaces are decreasing significantly. So that is only going to become more and more difficult. And, you know, I completely agree with Carly's point on that government at this point has a very difficult job. And, you know, we are in 4 provinces and, you know, obviously have impact from federal government. And the view is that government are trying to do the things that they think would have the biggest impact. And this is, but more dialogue, I think, would be extremely helpful rather than doing 75 things. Doing 2 or 3 things really well would go a very long way. And let me talk about housing first. You know, this is where, you know, how we build long-term care and retirement homes, thinking about, especially as it relates to long-term care, you know, this is in many cases affordable housing for seniors. The services in a town or a city that a senior uses are very different than a residential community with schools and libraries and everything else. So, you know, how do we reflect that in the speed of approvals and development charges? You know, some conversation about access to financing such as CMHC or other ways to build these homes faster. We don't have 2 decades to fix that. The second one is really around health, human resource, and both Carly and Tess touched on that. And I'm a proud immigrant. I came to North America 25 years back, and I continue to believe that Canada is one of the top places for people to immigrate to. But we have very stiff competition. The skills that we are after, nurses and PSWs, countries such as UK, Australia, Middle East, there are a lot of countries which are going after the same kind of talent. Think, how do you win that ability to attract more and more immigrants to Canada? And second, as we have seen that play out in the last 3 years, is it is one thing to get them, which we, as Canada, we have been quite successful. But when we get new immigrants here, it is a whole new world for people. I moved to North America 25 years back, and I remember landing on that airport as if it was yesterday. Everything is new. You have no clue what really is going on. And now when we bring immigrants to Canada, it is very difficult to secure affordable housing. In most cases, it is very difficult for them to work in the area that they have been trained in. So now it takes them multiple years to work as a nurse. So I think there are a lot of works which needs to get done on how do we line these things a little bit better. And I'll just give an example of a few of the things we have been doing. So over the next 6 months, we would probably help 100 new Canadians come to Canada. And the idea is putting them into remote places, and in some cases where housing is a huge issue, and I'll put Muskoka for an example, which is a cottage country near Toronto, is housing is extremely expensive. You know, you cannot expect someone to come from outside and then send them to Muskoka and say, okay, good luck, and show up for your shift at 9 a.m. in the morning. No, this is where we had to rent housing for them. Obviously the team members will pay for it. They don't have a credit history in Canada at the moment. So you have to do all of those things for a period of time for them to be successful, ensuring that they can, in fact, work in the area where they have been trained and the area where we need more services. Given all of these, I do believe, and I think AI would have some role to play, but end of the day, we are people-centered work. And the companies which will focus on driving that alignment with team members would have a much higher success in attracting team members than the others. And for us, that alignment really starts with our Sienna Ownership Program, which we call SOAR, Sienna Ownership and Awards Program, where all of our frontline healthcare workers are shareholders in the company. And then you start, how do you drive alignment more? How do you put their ideas into Sienna? So we launched Spark, which is a Dragon Den's version of Sienna. And the last piece of it is really the kind of leaders you're after. And I think that the first part of leadership is usually well understood, that leadership comes with a lot of perks. So I think that people understand that. The other part of leadership, it sometimes does not get understood that well. It also comes with extreme privilege. But with extreme privilege comes extreme accountability and responsibility. And one of the biggest one is to taking care of your team members, because really the only way to serve your residents is by taking care of your team members.
It really is about people again. It comes back full circle to Carly's initial comments. This is about people. This is about the people we are caring for. It's the people who live in the communities. It's the people who are working with you. We've talked about the diversity of our communities and the people who live in them, different expectations. As we think about building leadership, how do we foster and support diversity in leadership?
That's a great question. I will say, as a woman of color who is a leader, this is extremely important to me. And I think we need diversity in terms of all the fronts, gender, race, sexual orientation. And we need to ensure that that is reflected in our leadership team, and also diversity in thinking and the approaches that our leaders will take in terms of moving us forward. In terms of diversity of people, one of the things that, in my experience in healthcare, often it's that you may have a goal of having diverse leaders, but there isn't necessarily a pipeline of which those leaders are coming forward. And so if you apply the same type of principles of hiring, you may not find that diverse candidate pool. We have to challenge ourselves to thinking, how do we create that pipeline? Where are we going or partnering with others to start building that leadership, whether it's in high school, university, through different opportunities for some of our team and leaders who come from different sectors who can bring their perspective and can learn about the sector we're in, but be able to bring some different thought in how we can meet system goals, or how do we move past, as Nitin says, past the quality and accountability that's the floor, and really think about how do we start driving into the future of new and different models of delivering service and innovation.
Tess, if I can actually add to that, the last portion you spoke, and you know, completely agree with, you know, whether it's race or gender, is getting people from outside our sector. So obviously there's clinical. So you want doctors to give you medical advice and you want clinicians to give you clinical advice. But, you know, whether it relates to food services, administration, you know, recreation, you know, whether it's hospitality, whether it's retail, I think there's so much opportunity to bring talent from outside because, as you said, you're going to have a continued gap of both frontline and leadership. So could not agree with you more.
And it's such a great point as well. And we know that our long-term care homes, our front lines are largely women and largely coming from racialized populations. And yet, what is the pathway to support them into coming into leadership roles? And there's a great opportunity to tap into our front line to really inspire and support transitions into new leadership roles for our PSWs, for our nurses and others.
Yeah, and I think, Donna, the thing I would add to that is that some of the intentionality, I think Nitin referenced this and Tess, you know, to actually have intentionality about how to build the pipeline and then intentionality about what supports people need. I mean, Nitin talked about everything from if you're going to move to a northern community to work for Sienna, housing may not be possible. You know, what we know at the hospital is we would like to be a leader in internationally educated professionals coming into our organization. That requires very, very intentional mentorship and support to ensure success. These are the matters of our time. And if we get it right, it gives us a cutting edge on every facet of realizing the potential of our organizations.
So as we coming close to wrapping up, I want to shift to culture change. We've really spoken a lot about the magnitude of the change that is coming. Culture change takes time. The nature of what we're navigating today requires culture change in real time. Tess, if there are three things that are so key to building culture change in real time, what would those three things be?
I actually referenced a recent article in the Harvard Business Review, which speaks to culture change. So there's six building blocks, but I'm going to pick three just to speak to. Like the first one is really being authentic in terms of being a leader, featuring yourself in stories. I think that's one of the things I took away and I see all the time is that the culture is about the stories that people tell on the floor with each other. That's really what your culture is. Whatever you can continue to put that forward and say, this is what our culture is. But the culture is what your team members talk about, what is shared across that. So being able to share positive stories. And also I'll say breaking with the past and laying a path for the future. I think this one is one that we are experiencing where, you know, we have put a challenge out there that we want to deliver a different kind of care. And part of doing that is recognizing, yes, there is a past and we have to keep those learnings from the past, but we also have to create that exciting vision of the future. We need to be able to lay out what that means. We need to talk about it with our stories. We need to be willing to do things differently. But I do think that that's something that I'm finding is so important and it's hard. It is so easy to go back to what we know and the path that we know because that's what we do, especially in healthcare. But challenging consistently as a leader and as an organization, that culture and saying, no, wait, let's try to say yes as opposed to no. So I'm not saying say yes without any risk or without any understanding, but let's start with yes. And that in itself, I found in our organization, it's a big change, but it does enable people to feel a little bit like they can bring things up. And sometimes it's solving those small little problems.
That's wonderful. So Nitin, you referenced earlier your vision and the mission really focusing on cultivating happiness in daily life across your organization. What are the key points that you're focused on in cultivating that happiness?
In healthcare, there's a big focus on health and safety. And I would say that's the starting block. If you are in whichever setting you're in, health and safety, that's the minimum. You are going to get that. But the focus on happiness. And this is where team members come into play. And I'll just, maybe we'll do it very quickly, is, you know, we have team members, and I'll give a story of one of our long-term care homes. We're going to a concert is a big deal. And, you know, it is usually complex. When you add a long-term care resident with mobility issues and complex healthcare needs, is even more difficult. And one of our residents wanted to see Michael Bublé and told that to one of our team members. Her name is Fernanda. somehow Fernanda, you know, figured out a way to hire a limo, took this person to Scotia Center in downtown Toronto, took to a concert. And this resident turns to her and says, this is the happiest day of my life. Now, the impact that this employee created for a resident is incredible. And when you celebrate that, which we do, and this is a story worth celebrating, now team members know the license of doing it again and again. So the same team member found another resident who had a lifelong dream of publishing their music. So Fernanda took it upon herself to get a studio organized. And now that resident's music is on Apple and Spotify. And again, this is, you know, talk about cultivating happiness in daily life. So this is, you know, when you take the health and safety, which sometimes we think is the end goal. No, I think that's the starting point. Happiness is the end goal. And I think the only way you get there, in my view, is not three. I think it's that one, is having your team members back celebrating when they make those incredible things happen.
Those are great stories, Nitin. And they also speak about leadership from within. So you don't necessarily have to be the CEO to lead, but it's also the agency that leadership provides to others within the organization to lead in different kind of ways. So it's a very elegant story. And thank you for sharing that. Carly, what would you say the key things are that we need to think about as leaders in this cultural shift?
You know, I really loved where Nitin started on the value of elders in our community and telling the story of his life being impacted by his grandfather. I can share the same about my grandparents, who were an incredible part of my upbringing. When we put seniors in the center of everything we're doing, their voice, their experience, their perspective, it is the galvanizing force that brings everybody in this space together. The voice of seniors right now needs to be very present in everything we do. This summer, I went up to Moosonee to visit my colleague, Lynn Innes, who is the CEO of Winnebago Health Authority that serves the Lower James Bay Basin. And they're building new healthcare services in Moosonee that serves that whole area. And one of the things that is so striking in a First Nations community is where the elder sits and the voice of the elder sits in everything that they do. And I it was such a powerful takeaway for me to be a part of that discussion with Lynn and her team on how they're building their first elder care lodge in that community and the work and care that they have done to put the elder voice at the center of this. So it's great to say there are many people that are living all over Ontario receiving long-term care that cannot live in that community that they're from, but that's not where it ends. For that community, they spent time talking to elders about their lived experience, some of the trauma, for example, of living in through the experience of residential schools, and what would it mean to have a residential community living for seniors? How do you actually put that reality of their experience at the center? I think if we could all think about how that senior's voice, and I think the baby boomers are going to do this for us, because if they've showed us anything in their life through every stage, they are not afraid to use their voice. And so how do we shift everything we think about as we're designing this, not to a hierarchical, we know better, we can prescribe, we can do this. But to your question to us about the baby boomers, the aging population, how do we actually reframe the importance, the value, the energy, the wisdom, the voice of the elder in this? It will bring us all together in a very powerful way, and we'll get to solutions that alone we can never think about.
Wow. Carly, Nitin, Tess, I'm so inspired by today's discussion. It's such a critical time. And I think the challenge you've given us, and you've articulated it so well, Carly, on our closing note, gives me great hope. That brings a wrap to this season of Coming of Age. Thank you for listening and joining our conversations on aging, seniors care, and the profound demographic shift that is underway. This season, we explored new research on boomers' readiness as they soon turn 80, We ask big questions, such as what's the role of employers in supporting workers who are caring for their elderly parents? We learned about how digital solutions are supporting people aging in their homes. And we learned about global innovations, such as how master plans for aging are paving a new path in jurisdictions like California and New York State. Aging well requires collaboration that brings everyone to the table. Local infrastructure, housing, health and social services, education, to align initiatives and improve services for older adults and their caregivers. There are so many more layers to explore as we examine our perceptions of aging, innovations for seniors, and how we can work together to advance the changes that are required. We can't wait to bring you a new season of Coming of Age in 2024 to continue these vital conversations. Please subscribe to be alerted about new episodes. And while we're away, catch up on episodes you may have missed in this or earlier seasons. I'm your host, Donna Duncan. See you next time. This episode was generously sponsored by our sector champion, Plan A, powered by Staffstat. Plan A, powered by Staffstat, is the only staffing strategy in Canada focused specifically on seniors care. It marries people and culture to innovation to help long-term care and retirement homes optimize their staffing. Learn more about their mission to ensure senior care organizations across Canada have access to a strategy that keeps their frontline employees supported and their residents safe and cared for. Visit www.jointheateam.com.